Deputy Director Deutsch has a former Los Angeles police narcotics detective that the agency has dealt drugs throughout this country for a long time.
And there's a kind of a very speedy interior avenue and a very sloppy neo-drunken exterior action. The symptoms.
Drogheria, un sacco drugo nedelio o polne da Radio Student.
Jesus, I do seem like I've been beaten in the teeth with some kind of a marsh hammer.
Kato mozru, nanega. Svidi, kashin ga
posijes puha.
Drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, pozdravljeni v drogeriji. V drugem delu oddaje na valovih Radio Študent slišite Hanuša Hornbija, strokovnjake z polja uporabe konoplje. Hanuš kot vrhunski ekspert, znanstvenik, ki je tam 88. leta začel in enkrat 89. tudi s pomočjo sodelavcev v Izraelu odkril anandamid, ne, prvo je bil odkrit CB1 receptor v telesu, ne, na katerega se veže THC, na to še CB2. Takrat je bilo seveda že jasno, da mora obstajati neka endogena substanca, ne, zrcalno podobna THC-ju, ki se nahaja v ganži, ne, in tako Hanuš odkrije to substanco, leto 88, anandamid. Sicer pa Hanuš, učenec profesorja, ki je pred 60 leti, leta 54, organiziral konferenco o medicinski uporabi konoplje. Ne toliko za voljo THC-ja, ampak za voljo CBD-ja. Torej, če smo se kaj naučili na včerajšnjem seminarju uporaba konoplje v medicini, ki je potekal v hotelu Union, organiziralo pa ga je društvo Nej, je, ne, da so že leta 54 delali ekstrakte, take, kot delajo danes na ilegalnem trgu v Sloveniji, ne, sicer z visokimi vsebnostmi THC-ja, ne, ker uporabljajo seveda tisto ganžo, ki jo kadimo v rekreativne namene, se pa da, ne, delati po istem postopku z istimi topili seveda ekstrakti iz industrijske konoplje in v njej boste dobili majhne vsebnosti THC-ja, pa visoke vsebnosti CBD-ja, prav tako zdravilne snovi, učinkovine, kanabinoida, o katerem bomo kaj več spregovorili, kot rečeno, v drugem delu. Več o vseh teh zadevah strani Hanuša in pa Hornbija. Ne? Hornbija pa tist model, ki da recimo kakih tisoč primerkov ganže skozi roke na leto, že 15 let, je človek z največjo bazo podatkov o različnih sortah ganže. Ne? Zdaj pa k našemu gostu. Lep pozdrav, Janko Belin, živim.
Živa.
Ti si se pa modil v Dunaju, nekaj smo že v prejšnji oddaji spregovorili o konferenci na Dunaju, ne, tem političnem srečanju. Že takrat smo rekli, nadejamo se leta 2016, ne, ampak zdaj, dokler 2016 ne pride, kaj se je dogajalo 2014, ti si bil tam kot koordinator aktivnosti ENCODA,
ja,
te Evropske krovne organizacije, nevladnih organizacij, ki so bolj ali manj antiprohibicionistične. Pa povedal sem, povej malo, kako je vse skup zgledalo.
Ja, in kot je pač prisoten v CND-ju že, mislim, da več kot 20 let. No, ampak gremo kar na samo dogajanje. Letos je bilo lepo vidno, da prohibiciji nekako zvonijo zadnji zvonovi oziroma odzvanja pač, ne, prohibicija je evidentno nedelotvorna in to so priznali tudi bivši trdi prohibicionisti, ki se zdaj skušajo prestrukturirati in zavzeti neko zdravstveno stališče. Ne. Prohibicijo, ne, kaznovalni del bi zdaj vsem radi ohranili, se pravi nadzor bi vsem radi ohranili, ampak pod pretvezo zaskrbljenosti za naše in nasplošno za zdravje. No, začel se pa tako ne, z našega dela, da smo mi organizirali dva picket line-a, se pravi dva protestna sprejema, ne, tam pred Združenimi narodi. Večina ljudi pride z tem U-banom, z podzemno želelenco, ki sicer tam pride nad zemljo, no in izstopijo in grejo potem noti na sedež Združenih narodov na Dunaju. In mi smo jih tam pričakali, imeli smo dva kafe šnuferja, kdor ne ve, kafe šnuferji, to so bili bivši vojaki, običajno invalidi, ki so pred 200 leti tam okok, ne, za časa kralja Gustava, pruskega kralja, pa tudi švedski monark je bil zelo proti pitju kave. Skratka, kava je bila takrat prepovedana, ne, lahko si dobil dolgoletno kazen na švedskem, pa celo so te lahko obsodili na smrt za uporabo kave. Tako da mi smo ljudi sprejemali s temi našimi flyerji in jih spraševali, če poznajo to zadevo, oziroma nekateri so celo s kozarčki kave v plastični embalaži hodili in te naši kafe šnuferi so jim razlagali, da 200 let nazaj bi jih pa zaradi tega lahko zaprli. Tako da prvi dan so bili te delegati, ki so noto stopali, ki si jih že videl v oblekcah, rumeni, ne, črni, vse živi, ne, vidiš, ne, z različnih celin ljudi, so bili tako zelo rezervirani. Ne. Drug dan, ko so pa že približno vedeli, kva mi tam zun delamo, imeli smo tudi dva velika napisa, End the War on Drugs, pa Freedom to Farm. Ne. In ne, drug dan so pa že z veseljem je malo te naše nalepkice oziroma flyerje in tako. Tudi ne, prvi dan je prišlo do izcesa Jupa Omena, našega dolgoletnega tajnika, niso spustili not varnostniki. Načeloma ga že poznajo, oziroma Jup je itak tam stalni gost vsa ta leta in pod pretvezo, ne, hotel so ga tam malo maltretirati, celo osebni pregled narest, ne, in to je kar tam nek ameriški varnostnik, ker vemo, tam so varnostniki vseh različnih držav sveta, ne, kar on je določil, ne, da njega bomo pa pač malo razštelali, ne, in Jup se je vsedil v legu na tla in je rekel, ne gremo tukaj, mislim, tako, bilo je kar napeto. Ne. Tako da mi smo potem obvestili ves nevladni sektor, pritožbo smo dali na pač to sekretarijat za, oziroma na vodstvo za nevladne organizacije in tako. Ja.
Pa so ga po dveh dneh le spustili noter?
Po dveh dneh, ja, so ga zelo not spustili, ker zadeva je ratla delikatna. Ne. Da v Združene narode ne smeš. Ja.
Kofetkari, ne? Da ljudje vsem vedo, zakaj so bili tam kofetkarji, tako fino srečanje, kot je potekalo na Dunaju, je vendarle potrebno fine otvoritve in to fino otvoritev je opravila kraljica Švedske. Ne?
Švedska kraljica, ja. Zdaj moram reči, da jaz sem bil nad njo zelo razočaran, ker iz nje je vel en tak von po neživljenjskosti, prav po mržni do življenja. Ko vidiš ljudi, ne, tudi neki tam teli, neki voditelji, nekih antiprohibicionističnih lik ali pa, ne vem, Cities Against Drugs, vidiš ga, da je jezen na cel svet, da bemo ne dovolj, da ima generično vseb neko mržnjo do ljudi, ki so veseli. Ne. No in on je otvorila to srečanje in je z nje vel tak negativen duh. Ne, govorila samo o protidrogam, o zdravju nasploho, pa se nijam nič zopr zdravja, ne. Super je biti zdrav, ampak ne na tak način. Ne. Prav porezala je vse, bi rekel, možne bi rekel, mislim, tazga govora, no, mislim pa, že dolg nisem slišal, no, tako prav mračnjaškega, no, z mojega vidika.
Povej, kaj si zvedel v tem drugem delu srečanja, ko so se predstavljali boljši in slabši izgledi po svetu?
Ja, naslednji teden je običajno po tem high level segmentu je običajno potem namenjen pogovorom, ne? Ker prve dva, tri dni se nekako ovohavajo med sabo, ne? Razni delegati, ideje, ocenjuješ razne knjižice, ne? No, in naslednji teden je pa pač namenjen bolj bi rekel že dogovarjanju, izmenjavi mnen, dogovorim, kaj se bo mogoče skupaj delali naslednjo leto. No, in v drugem tednu je bilo zanimivo, ne, kako željni so v bistvu sprememb v določenih državah, ki imajo probleme zaradi prohibicije. Ne? Ker prohibicija, ne, v Sloveniji, ne, šaljivo je nekdo rekel, je rekel, ah, vi v Sloveniji navte nad spremenili, ne? V prva Sloveniji je prefino, ne? Vi sploh problemov nimate. Problemi so v Mehiki, kjer je umrlo 40 tisoč ljudi v parih letih. Problemi so v deželah, tam, ki je res, mislim, to tak žgoč problem, evidentno prohibicija in neuporaba drog. Ne? Problem je Afganistan, ki so ga Pakistan. Ne? Tako da jaz razumem te ljudi in ene in druge, ne? Se pravi, in te organe pregona, ki ne vejo, kaj bi naredili. Ne? No, zdaj že vejo, ne? Ker imamo recimo krasno skupino Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, tam so bili predstavniki, recimo bivša sodnica iz Brazilije, Maria Lucia Caram, ki lepo govori, vsakom z veseljem pove, se vzame 5 minut časa in mu razloži s fakti, zakaj je prohibicija, pa se.
Čakimo. A pol ta Law Enforcement Against Prohibition je ratalo že mednarodna stvar.
Ja,
včasih
ja,
je bilo
ja.
To sam USA, Ameriška.
Ne, tudi jaz sem vzaj naprej član z veseljem, s ponosem nosim značko. Ja, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition sprejema tudi strokovne delavce. Sveda, ja.
Poveš še dobra praksa v Vietnamu?
Ja, Vietnam je pač, mislim, vsem je težko govoriti, pač oni očitno se imajo tako družbeno strukturo, da se v bistvu sami bojijo govoriti na glas, tako da ja, tam je očitno, ne, da ni demokracije, govorijo pač o temu, da če se sam najaviš, so tvoje starši krivi, če starši ne odreagirajo, je pa cela, ne vem, skupnost kriva, ne, tako da ja, tam je zelo tako.
A če uživaš druga?
Ja, oni imajo to zelo tako po vojaško, bi rekel, ja, ni demokracije, no, tam.
No, bomo prebrali tole.
Ja, dajmo malo pogledati, to, ja.
Zdaj, ne, kdaj drugič mogoče, ne, zdaj se pa mi prešali tamo na ganžo, ne?
Mhm, ja.
Ni druge, ne?
Ni druge. Pa še koliko bi pol omenil, jaz malo.
No, a ti bi še koliko omenil?
No, dajmo najprej hiter koliko.
No, dajmo.
En kot, ne, mi smo organizacija, ki zagovarja tudi, bi rekel, tradicionalne način življenja, pravico do sajenja vseh rastlin, etnobotaničnih, kar jih je bilo in, ne. In zato imamo mi močne stike z Bolivijo in podobnimi narodi. Tam je bil recimo Dionizio Nunes, bili smo celo skup v hotelu 10 dni, bivši minister za koko in tudi sam gojitelj koke, ne, kokaleros. V Boliviji imajo 5000 zdravnikov, ki uporabljajo kokine liste. Namreč ne govorimo o kokainu, govorimo o koki, o tradicionalnem uživanju koke, ki ima not svojo kokakšen, svojo mešnico alkaloidov, ki te poživijo, ki imajo cel kup zdravilnih lastnosti in no, pač ne bom zdaj propagande delal.
Ja, izpadl pa je, da je za eno bolezen specifično pač pa še ena boljših
ja.
Substanc, ki obstajajo.
No, ena ideja, ki se zdaj poraja, je, v Belgiji so že potekali prvi pogovori, drug teden oziroma naslednji, kde bom pa jaz to v Sloveniji sprožil. Ljudje, ki se zdravijo za hepatitisom C in imajo interferonsko terapijo, so običajno brez energije, eni celo razmišljajo o samomoru. No, in kokini listi, ne, vsakega človeka dvignejo na naraven način, ne, dajo mu energijo za življenje. Tako da zdaj iščemo partnerja, ne, za projekt, ker nas mora biti več partnerskih držav, ki bi pač ta eksperimentalen medicinski projekt vstopila v ta pilot projekt. Da bi sam še to omenil, kokini listi so izvrstni za zbijanje prekomerne teže, za dvig energije, za pomoč, mislim, kokini listi so zelo zdravilni, no. Ja.
To je povsem jasno in očitno, žal pa mislim, da še ne morate tega vsaj po legalni poti dobiti pri nas. Ne? Neki poskusi so bili, da bi se Evropsko unijo že začeli prodajati, ne tudi en kot je to skušal doseči, ampak pa vse ni šlo.
Ja, bom izdal skrivnost, mi smo vse to poteka prek bolivijskega veleposlaništva, kar lahko povem, se bolivici tega niti ne skrivajo preveč. Ja.
Dobro, ok, hvala. Naš, drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, mi pa naprej za ganžo, ne, še ostajamo v medicini, ampak na polju konoplje. Današnja intervjuanca, dr. Hanuš in dr. Hornby, se bila včeraj na seminarju o uporabi konoplje v medicini. Prek tega video zaslona se nam je uživo pridružil še Robert Melemaid, prisotni bil tudi Rick Simpson, Duša Nominal, še kdo, moram reči, da je vendarle prišlo tudi neki tistih ljudi, ki delujejo v oblastnih strukturah in prisluhnili spregovorjenemu. Mi pa kar na vsebino, dr. Hanuš spregovori, kako je sploh začel se ukvarjati s konopljo, kje vse je delo, s čim se danes ukvarja.
I'm a scientist. I started work on cannabis 43 years ago. In 1970 in Czechoslovakia, I was teaching and doing research 20 years at medical faculty. And all the time, because at medical faculty in Olomouc in Czechoslovakia was rediscovered cannabis like medicine. This was rediscovered in 1950 by my boss, Professor Zdeněk Krejčí, when he tried to find some antibiotic principle of higher plants and found that cannabis is a powerful medicine that is antibiotically active against gram-positive microorganisms and many pathogenic microorganisms. So they start to use it in Czechoslovakia. In 1954 already was conference in Olomouc, cannabis as medicine. So it's not such new, like you see in the last year. And all 20 years when I worked, so I prepared extracts for drugstore, where they prepare medicine for medical hospital. And they treated patients with cannabis. So in Czechoslovakia, it's nothing new. It started already at 60s,
you know. So it was very natural 2 years ago, I think, to for the people to accept it as a legal substance, medical substance, isn't it? It's in Czechia, it's now legal, isn't it, for the use of medicine?
I work several years on that.
Yes.
I was one piece of many which tried to legalize medicinal cannabis. So I traveled because after 20 years Professor Meshulam from Hebrew University invited me to the research, try to find this ligand in the brain which binds to cannabinoid receptors. So I came for 1 year to Israel. So now it's already 20.
Succeeded with your help.
Yes, after 1.5 years I succeeded. So I'm already 24 years in Jerusalem at the university. So I study cannabis already 43 years, so I think that I know something about that. And all the time it was like medicine. And you ask what I am doing at present. I did intensively research, but in the several past years I was concentrated on medicinal cannabis because I thought time is going on, you know, my age. And when you are not young, you already don't think I won't be super, that they know I have excellent publications. So I think something I must help to people when they can treat themselves with cannabis. So I was concentrated on this. So I published less and work on that. So we won't continue on that, but at the same time we are working on different derivatives of natural ligands, so-called endocannabinoids and different derivatives of natural cannabinoids, just to find compounds which can be used for treatment. And of course, we are not only we, but also in another scientific places around the world, which work on cannabinoids. We are trying to find, of course, compounds which are active on peripheral receptors, not on central, so that you have no problem with your psychoactivity of these compounds. And in the fact, today, they knew several years ago, they knew that THC, this is the compound which treats. And now they discovered America, they discovered that cannabidiol is very important. So they see THC and CBD. But CBD. I returned to Czechoslovakia, to Palacký University in Olomouc, when discovered this antibiotic activity, Professor Krejčí, and then in 1955, they published a structure. It was cannabidiolic acid. It was first cannabinoidic acid, because in the fact, all these compounds are like acids. And just to treat person, you must decarboxylate these acids, and neutral cannabinoids are active. So Professor Krejčí discovered first acid cannabinoidic, cannabidiolic acid, and and he knew that S cannabidiolic acid, S cannabidiol is antibacterially active. So it's nothing new. Only now they found that also this is good, and that they can use also cannabidiol, which beats psychoactivity of THC, so that your body is influenced only with this positive effects which you want for treatment.
Ker sva v jetru, drage poslušalke, nadaljujemo s Hanušem, ne, že večkrat spregovorjeno, morda še ni bilo dovoljkrat, po kakšnem mehanizmu deluje konoplja?
It is ancient medicine, it is powerful medicine, but it's not panaceum. It means that it doesn't treat any disease. But it's a wonderful medicine which treats many of diseases. And scientists didn't know why it is. And in 1988, William Devane discovered cannabinoid receptors in the brain. And later, we worked at Hebrew University to discover endogenous compound from the brain. And we succeed. I did isolations. This was one part of whole research. And in 1992, in March, I isolated this compound, which we called anandamide. And you must have imagination, like receptor is like lock, and this endogenous compound is like key. When this receptor is binded to, when this ligand, this endogenous compound is binded to the receptor. So it's like that key entered the lock and fits this lock and start everything what you can see when you use cannabis. Because everything what can do anandamide in the body, the same can do cannabinoids. So, and these receptors, this like this lock, these receptors, these are one of the most spread receptors in the human body. And that is why, this explanation why it works on so many diseases. This is very important. We have up to now very good known two receptors. One is was called central, it's CB1 receptor. It is mainly in the brain and in reproduction organs. And second is so-called peripheral receptors, today we call it CB2, and this is in immune organs. So that is why it works on so many diseases, so this is the principle why it's such efficient.
Bob Melamed se potem norčeval iz vsega tega, češ da večina zdravnikov, pravili so pač eno anketo, se mi zdi med njimi, ne vedo sploh, kaj točno ta endogeni sistem je, oziroma vejo za njega, ne pa da vpliva na takšno množico ključnih procesov v telesu, da je seveda njegova regulacija izjemnega pomena. Zdaj, dan danes se širom sveta uporablja konoplja v paliativni oskrbi, ne? V kurativni pod nekim legalnim plaščem še ne, ne? Zakaj ne? Hanuš.
I tell you one thing. When was discovered insulin? The next year it was already used like successful medicine. When was discovered cortisone? The next year it was already used as successful medicine. We discovered anandamide 22 years ago, and up to date nobody tried it on human. Today it's very complicated. We cannot do it at the university because it must be toxicological studies and others, and this can do only pharmaceutical companies because such research is today very expensive. Today it's not like before that they can try it, it works, so we can use it. So this is one of the legal problems of how to introduce it to curative treatment. And I think that people which use it like illegally for treatment and were treated, so they should share all experience, but we need not only successful examples, we need also unsuccessful, because this can bring real knowledge how to use it, you know. And unfortunately it is not. And even better is because people can plant cannabis and use it for treatment, but I think that better is when it's organized, but I would like that it's for patients very cheap or better free of charge on prescription, because then he knows exactly what is the contents of the compounds. And what is using, that it's free of bacteriologically, that it's clean, that it was planted on the ground which has no heavy metals or something like that. What if you privately cultivate it, so it's hard to reach these demands, you know. So it's better when it's officially. Like in Israel, it's wonderful that growers cooperate with patients. Grower give to patient cannabis and educate him how to use it. And now, if it doesn't work, so he comes to grower and they can tune amount, or they can tune change variety, and he can find exact variety which fits for treatment of this disease. So I think this is advantage, you know, because if it's like somewhere it is that you have it like from drugstore cannabis, it's like pill, you know. They give you pill and tell you three times a day one pill, and if you are 150 kilo and you are 50 kilo heavy, they don't care. Three times a day one pill. So this tuning is, I think, very important. And under these conditions, then they must write down everything. Anamnesis of the family and which state of the sickness it was and how everything continued. And from this, we can find exactly what is the best for patients, because we need something general. You cannot all the time work with each one is good, but you know, if it's spread and are many patients, so then there are not so many physicians on that field. Yeah, will be maybe in the future, So it is important to have as good knowledge as are possible, you know, to give to the patient the best cannabis variety.
Hanuš je bil bitko na Češkem za legalizacijo konoplje, ne, tista je ratala za medicinske namene, zdaj pač bije drugo. Namreč odobrili so zgolj Sativex kot tisto zdravilo iz konoplje, ki se ga da dobiti v lekarni. Sativex, nač slabega na njemu, poln ekstrakt kanabinoidov iz konoplje. Je pa seveda zelo drag, mislim, da če se prav spomnim 10.000 kron, to je kar neki, ne za vsak žep. In če mu je verjeti, po tem letu dni, ko je dostopen na trgu, ga še nikdo, nobeden ni kupil. Tako da zdaj se tam na Češkem ukvarjajo predvsem z tem, ali bodo lahko ljudje tudi sami gojili, ali pa da bi imeli tako kot v Izraelu, da imajo 9 prostorov razdeljenih po regiji, kjer se goji konoplje, kamor lahko pač bolniki odidejo, se podučijo v uporabi, ne, in nakupijo to snov. Več o izraelskem modelu in pa doziranju nadaljuje Hanuš.
Any patient is sensitive by different way and need more or less of this compound, which is produced on demand in the body, or if use cannabis, so needs more or less. So for any patient, it must be tuned. It's not like pill that you sell 3 times a day, one pill. It doesn't work like that. Because when patients use cannabis, so they have days better and worse. So sometimes they can use smaller amounts, sometimes they can use larger amount, just to feel okay, but not to overdose themselves, because they won't treat them, not to have high. Yeah, so it's very important that the dose is constant. And in Israel already they are working on very good, for instance, vaporizers. Usually people smoke it. Why? Because it very fast cross blood-brain barrier. And if they don't smoke it and use it by different way, so they must wait maybe half an hour. But after that, they can feel influence longer. So what is also advantage, yes? And because smoking is not healthy, not because of tobacco or because of cannabis, but if you smoke any weed, yes, it's not healthy simply because this is pyrolysis and these are compounds which are not healthy for your lungs. So better is vaporization, because by vaporization you use just only these compounds which your body needs to treat. So in Israel they already developed vaporizers, very small, and there are some doses, and patient can tune it with computer, that from each dose they can use more or less, and at the same time it's still not sold, yeah, it's still
a clinical, like, trial,
in trial. Uh-huh. And physician can see also what use patient, and he can also tune it and change the dose from far away.
Okay.
Through computer. So it's really wonderful, yes, because there were some examples that came patients that said, oh, I use all the time the same strain, the same amount, and now I was in panic because I had high. It means that even the same strain, you know, you can have different plants or different part of plants, and it can a little bit differ. Yes, it's not homogeneous that the whole plant has the same contents. So he takes one time this bud, one time this bud, and it can differ. So with the use of these vaporizers, it can be like more precise and more efficient, because they won't treat themselves, you know. If somebody uses it recreationally, so has experience and know how many puffs to use, yes, but these are simply patients are not interested in high, so they like the dose which treats them. In the fact, all around the world today, medicinal cannabis is used only as palliative medicine. Somebody told me, oh, I heard it from many places, oh, it's not treatment. It's not true. Palliative treatment, it means that you are without symptoms, but you don't treat disease. But, sometimes patient is such crippled that when it used like palliative medicine, he feels like healthy. So it's wonderful for patient, it's wonderful for his family, it's wonderful for his friends. And even if this patient unfortunately is on the way to die, so just to come to the other world is for this patient pleasant, you know. And I think that this is also wonderful. Nobody can tell me that it's nothing. Palliative medicine is medicine which is treats, because are also legal palliative pills, yes? And nobody tells you, it's nothing, it doesn't treat. Of course it treats. And problem, why it's not used to cure? Because we don't know, have enough knowledge. And officially, they cannot treat something when don't know how to do that. Even if we want to treat diseases immediately, yes? But they need physicians, they need experience, because about 95% physicians are afraid to work with cannabis. They think that already is waiting police to catch him to the jail. So they prefer not to deal with this, you know? But I think it's a mistake, because sometimes they prescribe it only to patients at terminal stage, and patient was able to obtain this sooner, and they could treat him sooner. So the best experience for treatment, a real cure, it's like illegal use of cannabis, because many patients use it illegally. They don't abuse it. They use it just to treat themselves. And some of them treated diseases completely. Not everybody. As I said, not everybody, not every time, not every disease, and not every stage of disease. But according what is experience, like in Israel, for instance, palliative treatment with cannabis, it's successful about 85 to 90%. 85 to 90% without side effects. It's wonderful medicine. How many pills are like that have no side effects? Yes, and that is not 100%. Okay, it's not 100%, because everything depends on your genes. Our people have good genes, so they can live up to 90. Our people, they live up to 50. And if whole your family from both sides live up to 50, so you cannot expect that you will live up to 90, even if you live a healthy life.
To je bil Lumir Hončej, ki deluje v Izraelu, tam je 15 tisoč pacijentov zaenkrat, ki uporabljajo konopljo, predvsem tistih s kronično bolečino, rakom, Alzheimerjem, mišično distrofijo, multiplo sklerozo in podobnimi zadevami. Hornby, takisto kot Hanuš, predlaga za uživanje homogenizirano snov, ne, kot je Hanuš omenil, so učinki lahko drugačni, če pojeste vrha konoplje ali pa tizga od spodi ali pa z leve pa desne strani. Razlikujejo se zadeve, zaradi tega je dostkrat fajn narediti, če se uporablja v medicinske namene, seveda homogenizirano snov, torej kakšen olček, ne? Zdaj, kar se tiče tega CBD-ja in prisotnosti njega v industrijski konoplji, povemo še, da je Hanuš tudi raziskoval prisotnost CBD-ja v različnih časih in različnih konopljah in ugotovil, da če že velja za ganžo, ki se uporablja v rekreativne namene, da je najboljša sensimilija, ne, torej tista brez semen, to ne velja za industrijsko konopljo, kajti če je osemenjena, potem ima v večji vsebnosti CBD-ja, po nekaterih raziskavah pa se ob pričetku tvorjenja semena, ob osemenitvi začnejo tudi tvoriti nekateri drugi CBD-ji, ne? Pardon, se prevečujem, kanabinoidi. Do danes je znano, da je teh 122, ne, v konoplji, nam dobro znana sta dva, kakšnih 5-6 je še, ki so nam vedno bolj poznani, ne? Imamo jih pa še kakih 110 za raziskovati, ne? Sicer ima pa še nekih 900 drugih oziroma 800 drugih učinkovin, terpeni in podobne zadeve. Šaltamo na Hornbija, skratka, Paul Hornby je tisti, ki je dal še verjetno največ rastlinsko svoje roke in opravil kromatografijo, ugotovil, koliko vsebnosti tega in onega ima. Za začetek pa o njegovem delu v Vancouveru, v teh tako imenovanih compassion klubih, klubih sočutja, kjer je moč dobiti medicinsko konopljo oziroma konopljo. Ne? In njegovih izkušnjah z tisto izmed najbolj marginaliziranih skupin, izvržene iz zdravstvene oskrbe, bolnike s kroničnimi bolečinami in obenem odvisniki takih in drugačnih drog. Govori Hornby.
My lab was in a dispensary or a compassion club, as we call them in Vancouver, Canada, for 5 years, and there I witnessed roughly 4,000 people using cannabis therapeutically that would come in and out of the club, and I would interview them once a week, many of the members. And as it turns out, we did a survey, 80% of the people attending that dispensary were attempting to manage chronic pain. They'd have been in car accidents or on-the-job injuries, and a lot of them were terribly busted up, broken bones and spinal injuries and head injuries. And they were using cannabis to alleviate pain. But also within this demographic of people, we found that most were on disability, meaning they were accepting welfare money to survive. Most could barely afford to eat rather than to buy cannabis, which was a tremendous concern. Most were addicted to some form of street drug or another, or alcoholic. Because managing chronic pain, you have cycling with that chronic pain, what's called chronic pain syndrome, which is the mood, mental state that goes on with not being able to tie your shoes or go up a flight of stairs. You become psychologically changed. Often depression comes around, anxiety, this sort of mood disorders. So we were dealing with what we considered to be the outcasts of the medical system in that part of Canada, because these people had been through the medical system and nothing more could really be done for them. They came to us to use cannabis, and like I say, many were addicted to opiates. Something we didn't take us long to realize is that when people began using cannabis therapeutically, particularly when they took it orally, their opiate consumption would decrease significantly. So last year we actually did a study at a dispensary in Vancouver where we selected a group of methadone users that were addicted to methadone, were also using cannabis, and we simply overlaid both of the drug use, both the cannabis and the methadone, with oral standardized cannabis capsules. So they would take between 50 and 100 milligrams of THC per day in a standardized oral capsule, and we took 11 people to do this study with just a feasibility observational study. All of them reduced their methadone consumption by at least 50%. Some of them even came off it completely after a 3-month study. That we took that data to the what's called the IACM conference in Cologne, Germany last September and presented that data. It's not new, it's actually been done before and shown before that people can withdraw from methadone using cannabis. What's really significant about that is that 30% of the painkiller deaths in North America involve methadone. It's a major killer drug, and it's highly addictive. And unfortunately, our medical doctors in Canada are prescribing it for kids that fall off skateboards, other painful injuries, and this is a highly addictive drug, and they're using it for pain management. I have witnessed miracles with people in chronic pain using cannabis. Why they would go on a highly addictive drug just doesn't make any sense for pain management.
No, I'm sorry, but you're being serious. Methadone is being prescribed for physical injuries?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
It was originally prescribed for heroin reduction, but it also alleviates pain, so they started prescribing it for pain. I find that sick.
Yes.
Yeah. Od mojega frenda Foter, ne, je pa prvi prejemnik metadona v tej državi. Pršu je sicer metadon v državo zaradi heroina, ampak on, ker je bil na morfiju že 3 leta, ne, in takrat pač začne pojenjati in počasi nehati delovati, ne, so ga vsled kroničnega pankreatitisa prešaltali na metadon, to je bilo v zgodnih 90-ih, to še teče. Sicer danes, kot pravi sin, na le še 9 miligramih, zaradi tega pa kadi kar velik ganže, da mu je omogočil, da lahko tudi zmanjšil toliko ta metadon, ki mu pa seveda še danes zmanjšuje bolečino. Ne. Da si ravno ne, ga je v tem našem vrlem zdravstvenem sistemu ne, po nekaj, nekih mnogih letih prejemanja metadona ne, in nekih rošadah v bolnišnici, ne, so ga predstavili od tistega doktorja zadolženega za bolečino na tistega za odvisnosti, ne, pa so se tam trudili mu zmanjševati zadeve, pa on jim razlaga, da ima on bolečino, da ne morajo njemu. No, pač od takih zapletov pogosto pride, ne, en potem ti dajo radi volje takaka pomirjevala, ne, pomirjevala je tudi konoplja, pravijo. In kako fino pomirjevalo je lahko za tiste najbolj nervozne, za tiste, ki mnogo doktorjev meni, da jim pa res ni pomoči, ne, tistim, ki uporabljajo metamfetamin, ki kadijo metamfetamin, te lušne kristalčke, ne, v tistih steklenih pipcah. Kar hudo je, ima pa kar fajn način spopadanja s temi, pa z unimi na kreku. Hornby, ne, nekaj podobnega počnejo po njegovi zaslugi, mislim, da tudi v Kolumbiji. Lani so tudi tam odprli nek tak rehabilitacijski center za odvisnike, ne, od kreka in koristijo konopljo. Poslušamo na kak način.
Butter, we spell B-U-D-D-E-R, not like table butter, but it's butter because it's made from cannabis buds. And it's an extract that highly concentrates the THC. So what we do with crystal meth or crack cocaine addicts is we give them a crack pipe and we put a little dab of this butter in it and allow them to take a hit from it, which is the same ritual as smoking crack cocaine or crystal meth. So they go through the ritual, but then they get a powerful hit of THC, which will often send them wandering over to the couch and going off to sleep. But what they're not doing is seeking another crystal meth or crack cocaine hit. So we're derailing that kind of addictive cycle. If we keep repeating that, we'll come off the rails altogether. And we have a number of that are ex-crack cocaine addicts from that dispensary that I was in. So once again, it's just a powerful harm reduction agent.
Now also with alcohol, I've heard it being used as a supplement for alcohol abuse. Could you describe by what system you believe it works best with abusers of alcohol?
One thing we've noted a number of times is that you take oral cannabis, say you're on a drinking binge all day, and if you can remember to take an oral cannabis dose before you go to bed, you'll wake up with a significantly reduced hangover. You can maybe even drink a quart of Scotch whiskey, take cannabis before you go to bed and wake up with no hangover. If you don't wake up with a hangover, you don't have that need to try to feel better, which for most alcoholics is another drink in the morning, and that starts another day of oblivion. Once again, we're breaking that addictive cycle by putting a pause in there. And I believe that cannabis should be in every alcohol detox center in the world, because it'll remove a lot of the severity of alcohol withdrawal. It actually, the way cannabis works is it's actually a physiological balancer. So you'll get a balancing out of the central nervous system while a person's in withdrawal, and then you can maintain them into sobriety by giving them what I would use as a daily oral dose of cannabis.
Hornby pa nadaljuje z učinkovinami v konoplji.
Regardless, cannabinoids are really only found in the cannabis plant. That's a good way of looking at it. And there are many, however, what the most abundant by far is THC acid. This is in the most cannabis that's used recreationally. There'll be a high THC acid and virtually nothing else. The cannabidiol will be less than 1%. In a 20% THC, you'll have less than 1% CBD. Most of the cannabis in British Columbia, Canada, where I come from, is this high THC, low CBD. I call it psycho weed. Because if you smoke that much THC, you're going to become psychotic. Now, just aside on psychosis, I look at psychosis as a very broad term, from the tree hugger on one side to the paranoid schizophrenic mass murderer at the other end. In my experience with cannabis users, they tend to huddle toward the tree hugging end of that psychotic spectrum, although we have all lost touch with reality to some degree. This can be very useful for post-traumatic stress disorder, for example. Anyway, I'm getting off topic. THC and CBD are, in all cannabis plants, the most abundant cannabinoids, and we look at them being more physiologically relevant if they're present in higher concentrations. In my lecture this afternoon, I will present what I call the three-way split, which is the only three ways that the THC and CBD ratio can go. One is high THC, low CBD, like I just called psychoweed, which is the recreational type cannabis. The other way it will go is high CBD, low THC, which you'll find in industrial hemp, which is grown here in Slovenia. I was met some hemp farmers last night. I was telling them that the flowers from their hemp plant have got lots of CBD in it, but very little THC. The third way it goes is what I call the 50-50, with roughly equal THC and CBD. These are strains that are names like Halley's Comet or Canatonic Tsunami. They're actually crosses between the high THC and the high CBD strains, in which case one and two will come out as a 50-50. That ratio, those relation of THC to CBD, is written into the genetics and will not change. So you'll never get a 70-30 or a 60-40. You hear breeders saying, I've got a 20% THC strain that's got 10% CBD. I don't believe it. It doesn't happen. It doesn't exist. Unless you genetically modify the plant, in which case you'll have to shoot me first, because I will never do that. This is God's plan for the plant, and it is written, and it will not change. Now, getting to those profiles, the high THC, low CBD is very useful for dealing with chronic pain, for appetite, somewhat for mood. It does have its usefulness. The other spectrum, the high CBD, low THC, has extremely use as a medicine. And I believe that in the future, CBD will show a greater understanding and be used more as medicine than THC. Now, they'll be used in combination, too, because they work synergistically. It's what I like about natural herbal medicine, that I don't like about synthetic medicine, that synthetic medicine is one molecule sent in to attack a specific symptom, whereas herbal medicines work with brothers and sisters, and that's why we don't see the side effects that you see with synthetics, because there's other modifiers and manipulators, if you like, around. Anyway, back to CBD and THC, if you take a dose, say a standardized oral dose of cannabidiol, I would take it in the morning because you're going to have a day of mental clarity and focus. It's almost anti-ADHD, the effect you get from a high cannabidiol dose. And also, you're devoid of anxiety. It's a wonderful anxiolytic. It removes anxiety. And I've never met anyone who liked feeling anxious. So cannabidiol has uses for mood disorder as well as pain, because as it turns out, it's a powerful anti-inflammatory. So it works well for arthritic pain, back pain, all kinds of neurologic or neuromuscular pain. And then the 50-50 strain, which came to me 5 years into running cannabinoid profiles in BC, looking at psychoweed time and time and time again. And then a hippie kid from an island nearby brought some pot into the club that he wanted to sell to the club, which is normal way of doing. We buy from various growers. But I would test it before the club bought it. And this kid sat across my desk in the lab as I ran the sample. And cannabidiol is the first cannabinoid to come out on an HPLC profile. And the peak started going up and higher and higher, and I was starting to get excited because I hadn't seen this. I knew what to look for, but I've seen little bits, but now I'm getting this huge slug of CBD. And I get real excited, and the kid starts to cry. Because I never really asked him why. Maybe he was just having a bad day, but I thought he was emotional because he knew that we had a good medicine here. Anyway, 4 days before that, I had been introduced to a mother and daughter, a 14-year-old girl suffering from severe Dravet syndrome or epileptic seizures. She was having 10 to 16 grand mal epileptic seizures a day. When I met her, I immediately scoured the club for a high CBD strain, although I knew there wasn't any. And then 4 days later, this kid brings in this miracle high CBD strain. Within a day, I had it prepped into a standardized oral prep, and Mum fed it to her daughter, and she didn't seize for 2 weeks. Nothing. Went completely silent in her seizure activity. They took her to the hospital, ran more EEGs on her. Indeed, there was a significant decrease in her pre-seizure activity and the neurological effects that go on in epileptic seizures. And then she seized when she had her period. And this is now 7 years ago. She wasn't expected to live past 15. I escorted her to her high school graduation last year. She's now in her early 20s. She still seizes once a month. Really annoying that we can't rub them all out. Now, the same thing has repeated itself with a number of individuals. One you'll hear a lot of news or internet attention is Charlotte's Web, which is a young 6-year-old girl who's having 150 grand mal seizures in 2-week periods. Enormous, always seizing, right? Dravet syndrome again. When she took a high CBD cannabis dose, after every other drug had been tried, there was nothing left to try, they gave her an oral dose of cannabis, and she went silent from daily seizures to nothing for around 2 weeks, and then she had a couple of seizures. Same thing with her, monthly, 2 or 3, but no longer daily. Those daily seizures are life-threatening. They can have what's called status epilepticus, where they don't recover. The system is just completely shocked and they die. Many people in the United States are moving to states where they can get cannabis legally to give to their epileptic children because of the number of cases that I have worked with personally and also have heard about in other parts of the world. We had the same thing happen with another girl near Vancouver that we worked with too.
No, drage poslušalke, cenjeni poslušalci, poslušali ste dr. Paula Hornbya in dr. Lumirja Hanuša. Dva prvi se sicer že od samega začetka znanstveno pod legalnim okriljem ukvarja z endogenim sistemom, pa kot ste slišali danes, z iskanjem paralelnih konstrukcij kanabinoidov, ki se vežejo zgolj na CB2 receptorja, torej na te na periferiji, ne na CB1 receptorja, torej da se izognemo vsem tem psihoaktivnim učinkovinam. Ugotavljal je tudi, da v primerih, ko se doda enoti THC-ja, enota CBD-ja, ne, zdaj, če bi imeli vi dva ekstrakta, ne, en iz te hašišarske ganže, ne, en iz te za konopljeno olje, tisto je semena, ne, tako te osemenjene cvetove, kot smo rekli, ne, če bi naredili iz obeh ekstrakt, bi ga lepo združili v eno, ne, ali pa imali eno plus eno enotično vsakič, ne, in potem bi se izognili v veliki meri vsem tem, v tem primeru stranskim učinkom, ne. Stranski učinke seveda, da ima, kakorkoli že oni temu pravijo, ne, in te so v tem primeru pač zadetost, ne. Te se lahko izogne z preciznim doziranjem, ne, če uživate v njej, se ni treba izogibati. Ne. Še lažje se je pa izogniti, ne, s tem, da se naredi ta zmes, ne, oziroma da se vzame eno CBD-ja in THC-ja. Tok za danes, včeraj je bilo simpatično, društvu o njej je uspelo v Grand Hotelu Union združiti pisano množico ljudi, od mladih nadobudnih hašišarjev do starih babic in detkov, vse vmes. Lušno je bilo, kaj novega se je zvedelo, kdaj kaj več tudi s strani Roberta Melmejda, ne, ki se je žal udeležil zgolj preko videokonference, ne. Povejmo, ne, marsikdaj smo že kaj spregovorili o njegovih ugotovitvah, ne. Ena izpred mnogih let, ki dobiva zgolj še potrditve v raziskavah, ki jih večkrat omenjamo v Lang Saturi, je, da se ljudje ločijo na, mislim, da on to iznačujemo, blips in flips, backward looking people in forward looking people, na tej čist hormonski, nevrološki, kakršen koli že sestavi, pa to pomeni, da pač oni blipi imajo malo premal endokanabido in kanabinoidov, ne, oni ta drugi pa čist dovolj, če pa jih nimajo dovolj, pa so dovolj pametni, da si ga postrežejo od ozune, ne, in vzamejo kanabinoide iz rastlinskega materiala in s tem dovršijo tisti nivo, ki je potreben za njihovo dobrobit, ne, in tudi dobrobit ostali ki okoli njih živijo. Ne. Kaj več z njegovih strani, kdaj drugič? To je bila Drugarija na valovih Radio Študent. Ponovno se slišimo čez dva tedna. Z vami sva bila Tehnik Željc in Matej, lep pozdrav.
Sve što trči, htelo bi da trči, neka trči i treba da trči. Skakati, lepo je skakati.
Niš bi ni.
Pevati, lepo je pevati. Leteti, lepo je leteti.
Hajde da se drogiramo, a nek se oči sjaje.
Drogirija,
odajamo njih od
droga. Ti si nešto ga zbunio.
Pakimo in lepko ima.
Ne,
ja sam perti.
Živeti, lepo je živeti.
Magija! Kad god se okrenemo, nova flaša.
Nižbini.
Živeli.